Side 6, Old 20th, by Joe Haldeman. Continuing on page 232. Thousands of people lay dead among the trees with their cheerful fall foliage, among the monuments to an irrelevant heritage. Someone had made an effort to pile the corpses up, I suppose for burning, but had quit before the first match was struck. The White House lawn was still neatly manicured. I wondered where President Nguyen was. Safe in a bunker in West Virginia, probably. She wouldn't have stayed till the horrible end. She must have known about Lot 92. I walked among the bloated corpses with a handkerchief over my mouth and nose. They had only been dead a day or so, long enough to relax out of rigor mortis, but with their arms still splayed in an attitude of supplication, mouths open and full. It had been a warm autumn. There were guards at the entrance to the White House, wearing civilian clothes and gas masks. They had street sweeper automatics slung over their shoulders, but didn't challenge me as I approached. We exchanged hellos. "The president's not here, is she?"
"Nah, long gone."
"So what are you protecting?"
"Looting," one said. "Like we are looters," the other said. "No such thing as law, is there? We're just keeping an eye on things while our associates go through the place."
I nodded. "Taxpayers' money."
"Damn right. We were both in the 89% bracket."
As were most of the current criminal class.
"Good hunting."
I walked on down Pennsylvania Avenue. There were a few car wrecks, surprisingly few, but I recall that they sprayed Washington with Lot 92 at 3 in the morning. Not many people would be driving on manual. I walked down 7th Street to the National Gallery of Art. It looked like looting on an industrial scale. A line of about 20 large trucks guarded by heavily armed men, with unarmed workers bringing out a constant stream of paintings and sculpture. The workers weren't working class, of course. There were a few flabby executives, but most of them had the tanned, fit look of young millionaires, which most immortals would adopt. But it wasn't theft, I found. The men and women were taking the most valuable pieces off to storage for safekeeping until the world was more stable. I walked away and was joined by Electro.
"Not much like Portland?"
"About what I expected."
"I know why you came here, of course. You don't have to worry."
"You don't think it will be my last time?"
"That's right. Insofar as I can tell the future."
He handed me the black box and disappeared. I took a last look around and willed myself to New York. I was on top of a low building surrounded by skyscrapers. The sky was a uniform Payne's gray, and there was a horribly familiar roast pork and roadkill smell along with the smell of smoke. I crunched across gravel to the edge of the building and looked down. Every street was a funeral pyre. It was like Portland, but on a vast scale. 20 million people. The few living went along the sidewalks with supermarket shopping carts filled with paper and wood and solvents to keep the fires going. I had heard about this, of course, when we lived in the city, but it was a different thing to see it. I had an irrational impulse to go down and help, but it was just a dream, a nightmare, but a dream. I closed my eyes and pushed the button. When I sat up in the machine room, Bruce handed me a glass of water. I drank hungrily, trying to wash away the 2 death smells.
"So how did it go, Wild Year?"
"Disturbing. The machine took over." I gave him a quick summation. "Of course, it always has been in control, but until now it's been constrained by protocols, so we had the illusion of being in control of the illusion."
"But it only did it with you, and I suppose could with me. With the general public, it will be business as usual?"
I tried to remember whether it had actually said anything like that. "You know, I guess that was so obvious it never came up. It would be pretty terrifying to a client, and the machine knows it's in a precarious position." He nodded. "Well, its position is a little less precarious now. Somebody else died while you were in the machine." It was grotesque. But my first feeling was relief. The machine didn't do it.
"Anyone we know?"
"Heard of him." He looked at a block of data on the wall. "Moab Neandigo over in Ars. Sure, he came to the figure studio now and then, posed a couple of times. Damn. He was born in -8. Double damn. A year younger than I. Stroke? He nodded. Well, it takes some of the heat off us, I suppose. Jake, he paused. You're still thinking like an immortal. 3 people dead in 16 days. If it continues at this rate... Less than 6 years, I said. As long as people only died in the time machine, others could think they were saving themselves by staying away from here. But now, there's no reason to suppose that the rate won't increase. Or decrease. Or the deaths might end once all of us old-timers are gone. The next news from Earth is going to be pretty damned important. They have a lot of people working on it. And they'll have new numbers. I went over to the cooler and pulled out some tunoid and flatbread and rolled up a sandwich. What if it's still only the first generation dying? Then I'll probably join them sooner or later. I took a bite, famished and still disoriented from wild year, not ready to let bad news get between me and my sandwich. I never thought I would literally live forever. Did you?
No,
but longer than this... There was an emergency chime, and a screen appeared between us and the machine. Coordinator Edison stepped into the screen and peered out. This is for every first-generation colonist. We're going to have an electronic meeting tonight, everybody who's first generation, at 2000. I want every sub-coordinator and division head to be here in Studio A by 1945. It's a matter of life and death. He faded out with the same chime. 21. Family Planning. I felt weary and oddly besmirched, as if the death smell still clung to me. Maybe I could get my shower early, before going down to the studio. I called up, and indeed there was a vacancy in a half hour. The shower was up on the 2/3 G level, on the other side. I walked down to the ag level, though, to pass through the flowering citrus on my way over. The smell provoked mixed memories. I walked up rather than take the lift, undressed and got a towel, and found that the other 2 people in the cycle were women. They usually group us with the same gender, but there must have been a female cancellation. They were Trish Manning and Tatiana Sovala, both of whom I knew slightly. We said hello, and when I stepped into the space between them, warm water misted down on all of us. You have 30 seconds to get completely wet, and then 90 seconds to soap up. I did the women's backs, and they did mine, Trish suppressing a giggle at my involuntary reaction. Well, it had been a while since I was last touched by a woman. I tried to will myself into disinterest, but was not very successful. I closed my eyes while shampooing, and that helped a little. Then the water came on, pulsing for a minute of rinse. We dried off in a rush of hot air and got dressed. Trish only had a robe and left first. Tatiana touched my arm. Are you lonely, Jacob? She whispered. Lonely wasn't the word that came immediately to me, but I was honest. I'm still sorting things out, Tat. It's too soon. Okay. She stood on tiptoe, kissed me on the cheek, and hurried out. Maybe I would call her in a while. I didn't know anything about her except that she was a botanist with a beautiful back and butt. I was still in a reverie over her when I thumbed open my apartment door. Kate was sitting on the bed, nude, listening to music. She took out the earplugs. The door let me in, she said. We're still legally married. I don't know how much of this back and forth I can take. Are you crazy or just trying to drive me crazy? I'm ovulating, she said. If we don't do it now, we'll have to wait another month. You went off the BCP? To have your child, yes. But I thought you couldn't stand me. Why my child? Why a child at all? Don't ask so many questions. She turned around onto her knees and wiggled to the edge of the bed into a familiar position. This is best for conception, she said over her shoulder. Or do you want to talk about it some more? Well, as the coordinator says, I'm the type who shoots first and asks questions later. It was she who asked the question, though, as we lay together, damp and panting, on the narrow bed. "Why are you surprised?" she said. "You knew I wanted to be a mother." She'd mentioned it a few times. "I'm just surprised you got permission."
"Permission?"
She gave me a look. "Oh, you've been in the machine." "That's true. And?"
"They had a lottery. Edison said it would be good planning to have 20 babies born. Not one for each death. A large enough number so they could grow up with a cadre of contemporaries. So there was a lottery among the women who wanted to conceive."
"How many was that?"
82. "So I had one chance in 4. They didn't identify the winners publicly, so I came down to surprise you and you weren't in."
I squeezed her hand. "So you thought you'd minimize the chances of my saying no?"
"Well, why would you? It's not as if you'd have to raise the little brat."
"I know." That had been established before launch. There were 10 or so people who were trained to run a crash and be surrogate mothers and fathers for each generation, if there were new generations.
"But why me?
Not that I'm not grateful, but you could have hundreds of volunteers, and there's the frozen sperm on file from a couple of thousand geniuses."
"I prefer the hot variety, thank you very much. And even though we don't exactly get along, there's no one else I'd rather have..."
She made a helpless gesture and started to cry. I held her close and rocked her slowly and whispered a quiet song she liked. "Love, oh love, oh careless love." I showed up at Studio A a little late, having walked Kate home without clearing up much. I couldn't help recalling what her former husband had said on the shuttle, and this confused renewal might fit that pattern. But she did go back into Vivian's arms gratefully, and Vivian gave me a warm smile of understanding. I hope she understood what was going on. The birth lottery was the first stage of an absolute disaster scenario. The Becker-Sendrick process fails, and we're all mortal again, so Aspera becomes a generation ship out of ancient science fiction. We have to raise children quickly and train them to replace us. Of course, if the machine is really running everything, the crew could be all children, or corpses, and still make it to Beta Hydrae. A warming thought. There was a long table in front of the cameras. I knew everyone, some of them not too well. 3 empty seats. I took the one next to Dr. Dvorkin. She nodded. "I suppose our differences are moot now. Not much time for play."
"Maybe so."
I suspected the opposite, people wanting to revisit familiar times and places. Skye's voice counted down from 10. Edison, seated in the middle, stood up.
"Good evening. Well, not exactly good. As some of you know, Earth has decided to expand our communications link. Besides the large general update on Mondays, we're getting a continuous trickle of text and numbers via tight beam. Because things are changing fast, unfortunately. The death rate on Earth appears to be... no, it is accelerating. As of the last transmission, 175,000 had died, 98% of them first generation. That's almost 1% of all of us oldsters."
Drew Wheatley raised a hand.
3,000 younger people? That's scary, too, in a different way. Were those strokes as well?"
Skye looked at his notebook and touched it a few times.
"There's no breakdown for them separately, Drew. It just says, almost always, death was almost always the result of cerebral hemorrhage or occlusion."
Dvorkin raised her hand.
"We've sent a request for more raw data. Age versus exact cause of death. Profession, gender, and sexual preference. Whether they were in VR when they died or just before."
Edison nodded impatiently.
"We do have a weapon against this that isn't generally available on Earth. Nepenthe. Anyone who wants to, especially first generation, can put their affairs in order and opt for sleep, waiting for a cure."
"What's the survival rate for Nepenthe?"
Per Arnoldsen asked.
More than 80%, Dworkin said. But that's for the general population.